part of the conversation. Send us a WhatsApp message on +27 73 470 3520 or call us at +27 12 001 7679. Let your voice be heard. Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media. From broadcast to baptism.
Well, good evening to you, and welcome to the Wednesday edition of Business Sense right here on Adventist World Radio. We are powered by SID Media. +27 73 470 3520. That is a +27 73 470 3520. That is the number that you can use to talk to us, and I would certainly like to hear from you. Right, it is a Wednesday, and every single Wednesday we talk to entrepreneurs, and today is no different at all. And our business for today, it is integrated business investments, and we are talking to Elder Bangi Malaba, and he will be telling us a little bit about the business and some of the lessons that he has learned in this particular business, and maybe some of the lessons that he might also share with you as well. But more importantly, we want to know and understand the business, and he's joining us on the line. Good evening, sir.
Good evening, Tapelo. Good evening, listeners.
How are you today?
God bless you.
Ah, thank you so much.
I'm all right. And how are you, brother?
I am doing well. Just the end of the year fatigue is already starting to set in. I don't know if you are going through the same thing as well.
Tell me about it.
It's starting to creep in, eh?
Yes. You can see, you can tell that the plane is going to land now.
Ah, so it is about to land, eh? Yeah.
That's as well. It's been a long year.
It's been a very long year. And how's the year been for you?
No, it's been fine.
Yeah.
Ups and downs, typical of a highway.
Yeah.
It can't all be flat. It can't all be down. So you've got to prepare for the trip. So
yeah,
we've been doing well.
Yeah,
and also meeting some challenges and taking them accordingly.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic, fantastic. I mean, as an elder, you know, what how do you normally deal with end of the year fatigue? And I'm asking particularly for our young people who are also maybe struggling with these things. And I think in the world where we're dealing with mental health and young people also being affected by mental health, particularly from the places where they work, how have you, do you have a strategy for end of year fatigue? How do you normally deal with it as an advice to young people?
Basically, it's for me, it's actually an ongoing process from the beginning of the year, mid-year, and end of the year. In other words, it's actually the whole year, actually. When I meet my, I normally employ young staff.
Yeah.
I employ people who don't have experience, and I train them according to our, you know, operating procedures and all. So, yeah, but when I meet them, I always embrace them. I make sure that they feel they belong. Actually, they call it a family business.
Yeah.
And they are part of the family. So they don't really seem to get tired. They actually get bored when we get to the end of the year, because now they know that we're going to take a break or something like that. But you know, it's an ongoing process of, you know, mentoring young people, making sure that you listen to their problems whenever they come. You know, you always can tell from their body language maybe that they are not okay today. So mental illness really is something that we are very sensitive to, and we try to make sure that our we call them our children, because it's a family business. So we make sure that our children are well taken care of in that regard.
Yeah.
Just like our own biological children.
Yes, you know? Yes. Oh, that's so beautiful. That's really so beautiful. Okay, thank you so much, my elder. Integrated business investments. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself first, and then we'll get into the business itself in terms of when did the business start, and what exactly do you guys do at Integrated Business Investments?
Okay, thank you for that question.
Yes.
Integrated Business Investments, otherwise called Water Quality Experts, is a family business,
okay,
like I said to you. that belongs to the Malaba family.
Yeah.
My wife being the big boss.
Yeah.
I'm in the technical department. I report to her.
Okay.
So, yes, my name is Bangi Malaba.
Yes.
I'm a husband of one wife.
Yes.
A dad to two biological children, but
okay.
A million others out there, you know, everyone
yeah.
who everyone a young every young person to me is my child.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Be they in church or
yeah.
anywhere else.
Yeah.
Yes. So I'm an analytical chemist by profession.
Okay.
I also studied some bit of marketing.
Yeah.
Yes. So that's me.
Oh, fantastic. Okay. And you said you are water specialists. That's basically the, you know, the service that you guys offer at Integrated Business Investments.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what I wanted to then understand is, you know, I suppose water quality, water provision, all these sort of things sometimes sit with, you know, what in economic terms they might call a public good that has to be provided for by governments, for example. How do you then work with government from that end? Because it sounds like that's a government entity that should be taking care of such things.
Yes. True so. Government entities, you know, maybe in South Africa, there you've got parastatals like groundwater,
organic
water, you know, Mahalis, whatever.
Yeah.
And in Zimbabwe, you've got what we call Zinwa. In Botswana, you've got water utilities.
Yeah.
You know, in Zambia, they have different according to provinces, as it were. So, but mainly, you find that they're sort of government attached entities.
Yes.
But now you see, when you talk government, you are talking of big things.
Yes.
and with that kind of, you know, size, you also expect a lot of bureaucracy.
Yeah.
And a lot of dogma.
Yeah.
You know, people who have been doing things since 1939, the same way, you know, they're doing them even now, you know, that kind of thing. So we come from a point of view of consultancy,
okay,
you know, sort of changing the way things have been done to catch up with the times, you know, because even water quality problems that were there 40 years ago, 20 years ago, have actually worsened by now. So we need to move with the time. So we approach these big entities from that point of view to say, look, now things are here. Can we upgrade our operations as well from where we were to make sure that we catch up with the time? So that's where we come from.
Okay. And I suppose, like you said, people who have done things the way they've done them for 20 years, and we need to move in with the times. And that's the kind of expertise that you bring in to help them understand those sort of stuff. What are the recent ways of, you know, I suppose, water purification? Because I understand back in the days there was reverse osmosis, and, you know, I don't know if that's still a thing in water purification. But as a technical person, please take us through how does the process unfold?
Okay, thank you so much. When you look at water, in fact, it's got different segments. Okay, you've got potable water or drinking water, you've got industrial water, you've got effluent, you know. All these have got their own quality standards that have to be met.
Yeah.
And yes, and it's been very difficult, this part of the world, to achieve such standards.
I mean,
Even overseas, there are problems achieving those standards, but there are standards that have been established by World Health Organization that need to be adhered to. Okay, so when you talk of reverse osmosis, okay, it's one of the methods of purifying water, maybe to highest standards, depending on your application, what you want to use the water for. Okay, but you'll find that sometimes you don't need reverse osmosis.
Yeah.
When you look at maybe where you are. You are in Joburg, by the way.
Yes, yes, I'm in Joburg.
Yes, yes. Your I think your water comes from the mountains of Lesotho there.
Yes, that's correct.
You find that the water is actually surface water.
Yeah.
That just needs to be clarified. You do what you call liquid-solid separation. So after you have clarified it, you've taken out the suspended material.
Yeah.
Because remember the physical qualities of water.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be clear. It's supposed to be smell-free.
Yes.
It's supposed to be tasteless.
Yes.
Those are the three physical components of water that tell you that this water is fit for drinking. Of course, when it comes to microbiological applications, you find that the water may be clear, the water may be tasteless, the water may be colorless.
Hmm.
Yeah, I said colorless or
yes.
odorless as
yeah.
well. But you may find that you've got some microorganisms inside, so you need to disinfect the water. So there are many processes of purifying water, I call it treating water, you know. Mm. So reverse osmosis is actually an upend of the process, especially when you want very, very pure water,
yeah.
or maybe you want to bottle the water.
Yeah.
But for public supply purposes,
mm.
unless if the water is, let's say, it's seawater like in Durban or Cape Town, that's where they actually invest in very huge reverse osmosis plants because the water
okay.
there is very salty.
Yeah.
But if it's water which is coming from a dam or from a borehole or from, you know, these sources that are not very complicated, that
yeah.
is not very salty,
yeah.
then we don't, because that would be an overkill if you are
yeah.
going to apply reverse osmosis. So reverse osmosis is a very good treatment process, but it's also, that's where we come in actually as IPI.
Mm.
We call ourselves IPI, water
yeah.
quality experts.
Yeah.
What we do is when you come to me and you've got a problem,
yeah.
I test your water.
Yeah.
And I cannot offer a solution. If you just call me as Tabelo
yes,
and say,
Malaba,
I've got
yes.
a problem. My water is salty.
Yeah.
I cannot just say a thumbs up and say, no, you need to use this or use that.
Yeah.
No, because
yeah.
I need to establish. I
yes.
told you I'm an analytical chemistry,
yes.
a chemist, and
yeah.
I'm a very curious somebody.
Yes.
I want to know the water quality.
Yeah.
Before I can prescribe a treatment solution. So you find that even your treatment solutions may not be the same. You cannot,
yeah.
it's not one size fits all.
Yeah.
So so the problem that you may have, let's say there in Joburg,
yes.
if you go to Pretoria North, it won't be the same.
Yeah.
It's the same.
Yeah.
You know, it may be completely different. So the need to test the water
yeah.
and establish the contamination, both the quality and the quantities of contamination
yeah.
are the ones that dictate the method of purification that you need to apply.
Mm. Okay, all right. I love this technical conversation because I know we spoke to Umem last time and she gave us the commercial side of things, and that's why, you know, I want to just focus quite a bit on the technical side of things. How big?
She's a business major.
Yes,
so
exactly.
That's why she's the boss.
Exactly. So that's why we said, you know what? When we talk technical, we need to bring you in from that end, and that's why I wanted us to balance the conversation like that. So how big a problem is the lack of purified water, particularly in Zimbabwe, where you offer a service, and also in Botswana as well? I understand you do work there.
Yes, I'm actually in Botswana right now.
Yes.
That's where we run our business.
Yeah.
If you could Google and check like compliance levels, because
yeah.
Compliance levels, you know, especially in Africa,
yeah.
it's quite concerning. It's
yeah.
quite concerning.
Yeah.
Because you find some countries having 22% compliance.
Mm.
Some countries have 15, some even 4%,
you
know. And you know, unfortunately, I'm not very young myself.
Yes.
I may look young, but
yeah.
I'm not very young.
Yeah.
But when we grew up, Tabelo,
yes.
we were drinking water from an open dam, an open dam, and you know, you could even see maybe a donkey dead, you know, a few meters from there.
Mm.
But you know, I don't remember myself getting sick or even the people that I was herding cattle with, you know, back in the rural areas. But, you know, then things were not as bad as they are now, you know. So which as Africa, I talk of Africa myself. As Africa, we should move with the times, you know, that, you know, the contamination levels have actually also gotten more sophisticated, you know, even thieves, you know, humans who harass us. They've also upgraded their skills. The skills that they were using 15, 20 years ago are different now. So it's the same as, you know, contamination components of water. So we need to move with the times. So when you look at a country like Zimbabwe, you know, being a Zimbabwean, I'm a proud Zimbabwean myself. And we are renowned to be the most enlightened group, you know, the Zimbabweans. And rightly so, because, you know, we were afforded that opportunity, you know, by our government. What breaks my heart is the fact that we are still prone to waterborne diseases like cholera, like typhoid. We are still prone to those when we have people who, we have professors. We have chemists, we have microbiologists, we've got biochemists, we've got scientists who should actually be looking for solutions to, instead of just teaching students at the University of Zimbabwe or National University of Science and Technology or any other university for that matter. We should actually go a step further, engage those students in researching on how we could alleviate that problem. You know, how can we contain this cholera and take Zimbabwe or Zambia or South Africa or any country in Africa out of that cholera red zone, you know, from research and development. You know, we should develop methods of tackling those. So that's what I believe the most myself. And I think a country like Zimbabwe could actually, you don't even need to invest much in that. You just have to have, I don't know if I should say political will or just will to, you know, like public will to to get these things sorted out. Then you involve all the stakeholders. And I tell you, one day you become compliant like 100%, and then you know, because, you know, even if, you know, when it comes to especially drinking water, if it's compliant, even 95% is not good enough, because that 5% can cost a life.
Definitely,
you know. So I believe in 100% compliance, and that's what I don't settle for anything less than that.
Okay, fantastic. Now, I know there's quite a lot of equipment that is used in this water purification processes, right? In a nutshell, if you were to summarize them, how accessible are these equipments in your everyday work? And are they really, really needed for the work that you do? Mr. Malaba? Okay, seems like we've lost Mr. Malab. Let me see if I can get him back. Let me see if I can get him back. I can hear you now. Yes, fantastic.
You can hear me now.
Now I can hear you. So my question was around the use of equipment. There's obviously specialized equipment for this type of work. How accessible is that type of equipment?
Thank God we have equipment available. From all over, you know, South Africa itself has lots of companies that manufacture such equipment, and also overseas, you know, we've got equipment from France, we've got equipment from Scotland. We are actually using equipment from Scotland ourselves. We have partners in Kelso in Scotland, whose equipment we use. So equipment is readily available, and my slogan is, if technology is available, use it, you know, for the benefit of the populace. So the equipment is there. We, you know, like when you look at surface water treatment, like from dams, you've got clarifiers. They normally build big plants, but if maybe it's small, they can actually have them constructed. South Africa has companies that construct those. So what we do ourselves is we, like I told you, and I'll always emphasize this.
Yeah.
There is no one, no matter how much of a genius they are or claim to be, there's no one who can offer a solution on the phone without having established the problem of the water. Okay. So it's not like one size fits all.
And,
so what we do is we assess the problem of that water and the need that is the need that it we need to apply the method that we need to apply to be able to solve the problem. Okay. And then we prescribe, we call it sizing. So it's also very, very critical that you should size your equipment, because you cannot take let me say a Mercedes Benz E300 engine and you put it on an F35 truck.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, and then you expect it to perform.
Yeah.
You know, you need to establish the need, and then you size the equipment which is appropriate for the flow and what it supplies. Because if you undersize or oversize, it's still bad news. You need to. So we do the. That's where our expertise comes in. That we do the sizing and the recommendation to say, here you don't need, like, okay, I'll give you an example. Which village do you come from?
From Qwaqwa in Free State.
You come from the Free State, from Qwaqwa.
Yes.
If you look at Qwaqwa, you get your water from where? From Bloom River?
Yes, from, also it's very close to Lesotho. In fact, Lesotho is the next door.
Yes, it's very close to that water, much as it needs purification, but it's not very complicated in terms of its quality.
Yeah.
But if you were to come up to northwest, maybe come close to Vereeniging or let's say Mafeking, or Ventersdorp, you find that there's a lot of lime in the water.
Yeah.
So if you got that water. The equipment that you can use for purifying water in Qwaqwa, even if it's the same amount, may not be the same as the one that you can use in the northwest.
Because,
so that's where we come into. It's no one size fits all.
Yeah.
We have to establish what it needs.
Yeah.
And when the water, and as you go further, let's say you go towards Kimberley, I'm using South Africa because you come from there, so you understand.
Yes.
When you move towards Kimberley, you find that the water there maybe has got more dissolved salts and maybe fluoride as well. So that's where now we say, oh, okay, after testing the water and establishing what components or constituents of its impurity are, then that's when we say, okay, now we recommend reverse osmosis.
Okay. I'm really excited about this because, to be honest, Mr. Malaba, I have been exposed to a bit of these processes with some of the people that I've worked with in Mpumalanga.
Awesome.
So I get exactly what you're saying. I'm not as technical as you are, because from where you are coming from, you're very, very technical. But I was taken through a plant that processes water and all those sort of stuff. So I really got to be excited. And when my producer said, let's talk about the technical side, I was like, that's definitely what I wanted to talk to you about.
You volunteered to handle it. And I'm excited. Yeah, you are quite enlightened, and I'm happy about that.
Thank you so much, man. And in fact, I'm getting excited as you speak about it, because I'm sitting here and I'm thinking to myself, what an amazing job you must be having, because you're literally saving people's lives. Because we can do away with electricity, we can do away with cars and all this stuff, but water is very important. And as you are saying, you must make sure that 100% things are going the way they should be going, because even a 1%, a 5%, that could kill people.
Absolutely.
You know, people
would
die because of that 1 or 2%. So I appreciate how you don't take things for granted, and really that's something that I find quite enlightening. So I want us to get here, Milder, because I also promise you I'm not going to take much of your time. I want
no,
us
it's
to get...
okay. Look, I have time for you. So
thank you so much.
Let it be limited by you, not me.
Yes.
I'm here. Yes.
No
yes,
problem.
Yes.
All right. Let's talk about then when you started the business, right? As a technical person, as a chemist, for example. What were the expectations of where you saw the business and what you actually realized when you were now running the business? I'm thinking here that bureaucracy with government, even though they saw and understood exactly what you are doing and the problem that you're solving, there's always those people that are always gatekeepers and all that. What was your experience of when you are now running the business?
Oh, thank you for that question. Mm. Okay. You know, when you go hunting, especially when you are still a novice,
yes,
you don't start by hunting kudus and buffaloes and elephants.
Yeah,
you start with small animals.
Yeah.
Of course that are allowed in Leviticus 11. So, hello,
I can hear you, Mild. I'm still here.
Yeah. So you start small, and then you grow from there.
Mm.
Okay. So we did not start by engaging government at high level.
Mm.
We started off with, you know, hospitals. Just you identify a clinic there.
Yeah.
You help them with their little water supply.
Yeah.
You know, and then you know they also, like, remember I told you there's also industrial water treatment. In fact, that's where we started. Industrial water treatment. If you pass through a hospital, you see some steam coming up. Or even the power station, you know, they've got the boilers, they've got cooling towers. So we started small, you know, we started with small boilers, we started with small cooling towers, we started with small chemical water tanks and chemical water systems, and then we grew from there. So we got used to even the modalities of getting there, and, you know, learning how they behave, and I also started marketing.
Yeah. Yes.
Marketing, sales, and selling management. Selling and sales management as
yes.
well. So you start applying those that what you learned at school is theory. Now it's in practice to overcome, you know, that government bureaucracy,
yes.
or let's say any bureaucracy for that matter. It doesn't matter where it comes from.
Yeah.
You know. So that's how we sort of tamed this elephant.
Mm.
So now, we can go to any. I mean, I actually one time I was talking to the chief executive of Rand Water.
Yes.
Rand Water. I mean, I think that's the biggest water supply company in Africa.
Yes.
So, and I was talking to him some years back, and, you know, I was telling him that we could get his water to 100% compliance. So that's us. Yes.
Okay, I get that. That's really amazing. All right, I want us to then round it up in this way. What are some of the trends that you are seeing in this particular space? In other words, are there new technologies that are being brought in? Are there, you know, issues surrounding AI, artificial intelligence, automation of some of the processes, you know, in water purification? What are you seeing coming up in the next coming 5-10 years in this space?
You talk of AI.
Yes.
I was thinking about it
yeah.
a few days ago.
Yeah.
You know, I was saying there's this AI thing, and I'm into water treatment.
Yes.
You know, and Africa, I was actually thinking in particular of maybe places which are a bit inaccessible, like, you know, or countries that have challenges of connections, of connection between one city to the other. Maybe, you know, I was thinking of in the context of DRC, you know, and I was saying, you know, someone who is in the rural areas or maybe in very remote areas needs purified water just the same as someone who stays in Sandton. So, and I was saying, I think one can employ AI on that, you know, maybe use drones, you know, and whatever, and just make sure that you send maybe an insight also on how they can actually mix things or ingredients to come up with a solution that can actually kill the germs and give those people good life. But to be honest with you, it's unfortunate that we are a bit on the slower side, I think, this part of the world, but we need to catch up to that.
Yeah.
coming to your question, because I'll tell you what I came up with my Scottish partners.
Yeah.
You know, rural areas, let me not say rural areas, let me say remote areas where there's no electricity.
Yeah.
But there is a water supply, like there's a little borehole there and a collector tank there, and then there are a few villagers around, you know. I came up with a design of some piece of equipment that actually uses the flow of water to generate electricity.
Yeah.
So when they switch on, let's say the borehole pump, because borehole can work with a diesel engine or maybe solar or whatever.
Yeah.
But solar is a bit risky because people steal those panels because they know they are valuable. They use them for cutting hair or whatever, or they sell them. So they would stay. You install it today and then tomorrow it's gone. So to avoid that, I actually came up with a concept where you actually install it on the pipe, and then when he switches on the borehole, it drives a turbine. That turbine produces electricity to drive your chemical pumps that draw ingredients, and then I've got a reaction chamber where those ingredients mix and then produce a disinfectant that actually gets dosed proportionate to the flow of the water into the water, so that the water, the contamination in the water, like the bacteria, viruses and all that are in the water, are actually taken care of. So those people are able to live healthy. So that technology, I actually introduced it here in Botswana. And once it's rolled out, it will make Botswana to be the first country in the world, not only in Africa, in the world. Because the challenge that the whole world has is to treat water or to disinfect water in remote areas where there's no electricity.
Yes.
Everyone has that problem. You go to India, you go to Australia, you go wherever, they have that problem. So when Botswana rolls that one out, it's going to be the first country in the world to achieve 100% compliance.
And
I feel good because that's my brainchild, and I sold that to them.
Ah, that's amazing. So right ahead of the curve and almost defining what the road should look like for, you know, this particular industry. And I believe that's exactly what God has called us to be heads.
Absolutely.
And showing leadership and showing direction in the world. And that's really amazing. Just in a minute or two, my elder, you came up with an invention even during COVID. So it seems like this invention thing is within you. Can you just tell us in a minute or two what that invention was?
Now that you've asked, I'll tell you. God has been an amazing, Tapelo. Honestly, I don't claim to be a genius, and I was never. I think you were a genius at school. I was never a genius myself. But God has been with me, and He's still with me. And during COVID time, when COVID was announced in 2019, you know, I think it was, I don't know, it was just a voice that said to me, there's a solution to this. But to me, I thought people were just going to come up with a solution because it was like, it was common sense. This is a virus. You know, a virus is a non-living thing. So if once you get a solution for it, and we had solutions for viruses because we could wash our hands, we could sanitize, we could do whatever. But the problem now was once it got inside into your respiratory system, then we could not use those agents to curb it. So now I said there must be, I must look for something that can follow it where it has camped or where it has stayed. So I started reading my books, doing some informal research. And then, by the way, because during that time when there were the first lockdowns in April of 2020, I think it was in April, when the first lockdowns came here in Botswana, I was sitting with my family, and my wife closed the gate. That gate could not be opened by anyone. And then the people, the water utility company here called me and said, man, you can't be locked down because this is an emergency. I mean, people need clean water during this time. So you must come out. We're doing a permit for you so you can go through all the roadblocks so that you can provide your service. So I went to pick my permit, but in my conscience wasn't very clear because I said to myself, look, my family is sitting at home. If I go out there, I mingle with people, definitely I'll pick this thing and I'll come with it to my family and infect them. So I said, I looked for something that could protect me. So and then I said, you know, this thing, we heat it on the surface. So let me look for something that is unstable, something that can hit the virus, which is unstable, so that when you open the bottle, so that it can only be gas because you can't put liquid onto your lungs. So I had to come up with a gas that is safe for your lungs that actually inactivates the virus. So when I did that, I was quite excited. In fact, I think I cried for the whole week. Sure. I said, God, because people seem to be battling getting the solution. Yes. And I even listened to an interview during those presentations of those scientists for Donald Trump. He was still president then. Yeah. The guy came so close to the solution that I had found, but he missed it. You know, he missed it because he did not employ gas. He actually left it in solution. So you can't put a solution onto the lungs. For me, the Lord revealed that gas, and then he even enlightened me on the effects of COVID itself. That it was actually more of its effects than the infection itself. That it took away your strength, it impeded oxygen reticulation in your body, and then I diluted that stuff to say, okay, if a patient like you has no power, he can't even raise himself from the floor, if I go and I make him sniff that gas, and then I make him drink the solution, which is boosted with oxygen, and then my patients, I did not lose even one patient myself and my team. I had teams in South Africa, I had teams in Zimbabwe, I had teams in Botswana, and we just gave them that stuff, and then the people, in fact, it was even more successful with the Delta variant.
Yeah.
And the Lord kept on revealing to me more and more about this COVID, to a point that even when I spoke to medical professionals, they were wondering where this thing was coming from. But what I discovered was people needed to just sit back and give it a thought, pray to God to enlighten you more, and then it was going to be easy. And, you know, I would actually have problems with you if I found you with a cough syrup, because I wanted you to cough and take out the phlegm out of your lungs, and then you would start breathing. So that's the story of my life. We can talk the whole night.
That's a beautiful one. All right. No, we'll explore this quite a bit next time. But thank you so much. How would you round it up, my elder, for young people who want to get into business? What would be your 10 seconds of advice as we round it up? Good day, elder. Can you hear me? Elder, can you hear me? Good day, elder. Can you hear me? Okay, seems like we've lost the elder there. Let me see again if I can get him back online so that he rounds this thing up for us there. So that we round it up quite beautifully there so that it's not left hanging, as it were, right? Elder, are you back?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes. Oh, I was just saying,
issues with connection there.
No problem. I was saying, as we round it up, what would be your 10 seconds to a young person who wants to start a business?
You know, when Moses wanted to, or when Moses was instructed to free the children of Israel, you know, if the Lord said, what is in your hand?
Yeah.
You know, you've got what it takes, young people. You must thank God that you have this faith. God will, once you surrender yourself in the hands of God, He's going to direct your paths. You don't have to be a rocket scientist or a genius to achieve something. But what I can advise young people to do is look for something that you have passion for. And when you establish your business, let it not be primarily because you want money.
Okay.
Be a service provider. Add value to people. You know, when I was in Atlanta, Georgia, I picked something about the culture of Americans, especially at General Conference. You know, people were telling me I'm running this ministry and whatever. You know, you find that people get into business not necessarily to make money. You know, they get into business to provide a service, to solve a solution. So look for problems that you can solve, especially the uncharted waters. And when you can provide a solution, the Lord is definitely going to lead you. And you must pray every day, make sure that the Lord walks with you that path, because the Lord has got 1,001 solutions for one problem.
Okay, that's really beautiful. Thank you so much, my elder. I really appreciate that. And
you're welcome, Tapelo.
God bless you and your business as well.
You're welcome, Tapelo. There's just one thing that I left out from the beginning. You know, when I started this, how this thing started was, you know, it started when I was at college. And I was on attachment at Criterion Waterworks in Bulawayo. So, you know, we were purifying water for the whole of Bulawayo. So I won't forget that during Sabbath, you know, when we were youth, I was attending Jamison Street Church, now called City Church in Bulawayo. So during Sabbath afternoons, when we had our youth meetings, you know, I used to, I don't know whether it was bragging or, but I felt good to tell them that, "You people, your lives are in my hands." You know, I make sure that the water that you drink is harmless to you. So it's that spirit that still exists in me. When I get to a place and then I find that there's a problem and people have issues with compliance, like I'm talking to you right now, I'm 950 kilometers away from home. I've come to solve a problem at your hotel where they have issues. Okay, Tapelo. God bless you, my son.
Thank you so much, my elder. All right, have a good one.
Same to you, my son.
Bye-bye. That was our elder there talking to us about the technical side of water purification. I have certainly enjoyed that because, like I said, I had exposure to it, so really enjoyed it. Thank you so much, my elder.
Do you want to make your money make sense? Listen to Business Sense every Monday to Thursday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. and make sense of your money.